Times are changing around LSU's athletic department. With a new athletic director comes new policy. Wait till you hear this one. The best ability is availability. And because he was never available, he ain't no longer a New Orleans Saint. LSU got the Hola Tiger over the weekend. A must-get stays close to home. And training camp starts on Thursday. We'll get an update on the Tigers today, Monday, July 29th, 2019.
Sale deals, and the pitch is lined at deep left field. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It is a two-run home run for Austin Roman. Over the high wall and into the monster seats. Romy, my homie, he hits a two-run home run, and the Yankees take a 2-0 lead. And that is drilled. Deep to left field. O'Neill is going back, looking up. See you later! A three-run home run for Jose Altuve, and it's 5-0 Astros. And the 2-1 pitch, a fly ball, right field and deep down the line, in the corner, slicing, landing, fair, and a home run. A three-run homer down the right field line. It's 5-0 Twins, and the White Sox fans are booing. But Twins territory, you're cheering early on today. 5-0, nobody out in this first inning.
Oh, good afternoon. The cream of the crop of the American League, the Yankees, the Astros, the Twins, all taking care of business. And what a day it was for Jose Altuve as he collected career hit number 1,500 in his 1,190th game of his career, a 6-2 win over my beloved St. Louis Cardinals, a three-run shot, the six-time All-Star. What a career he has had as he's chasing down Craig Biggio, who had 3,060 hits, the most hits in Astros history. He did it in 2,850 games. Jeff Bagwell is second. Jose Cruz is third. Cesar Cedeno is fourth. Lance Berkman is fifth. Jose Altuve is sixth. And he is chasing them down left and right. Off day for the Astros against the Indians coming up tomorrow. But a milestone for Jose Altuve. Oh, what a busy day we have planned for you and yours. By the way, it's National Chicken Wing Day. All you can eat at Hooters are just $15.99. Well, there goes Clint. He's gone. I lost my producer. He has hit the highway. He has gone to eat all the wings he can.
Bye,
there's nothing better than National. Oh, see you later, Clint. I'll take care of it. Just get back for Hot Topics, please. I'll give you an hour off. How many wings can you eat in an hour, big guy? That's what I'm asking. I bet you that's a lot. A lot. National Chicken Wing Day. All right, so we had a busy show planned for you and yours. He had a sit-down conversation with new athletic director Scott Woodward of LSU. Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag will join us under an unprecedented fund transfer policy initiated by former LSU athletic director Joe Oliva. The LSU athletic department combined or contributed millions of dollars to the academic institution known as LSU. Between 2012 and 2017, LSU Athletics contributed nearly $50 million to the university. That policy will no longer continue under Scott Woodward's watch, at least not as it has existed in recent years. It's not going to say they're not going to give a penny to the academic side, but having to be guaranteed we're going to give you X amount of million per year, that ain't going to happen anymore. You know why? The cost of doing business just went up. LSU built this state-of-the-art football ops center with this incredible dining area in it. It costs a lot of money to prepare that food, to buy that food. Costs continue to go up and up and up. And that's why LSU's trying to sell beer and wine to try and make some revenue to cover all this. All these pay raises for coaches, the cost of travel, the cost of equipment, everything keeps on going up and up and up. LSU needs to sell a lot of tickets. They need to sell a lot of programs. They need to sell a lot of parking places. They need for a lot of you to give them a lot of your hard-earned green. So we'll talk with Tyler Nunez about that. Cam Meredith, no longer a Saint. Can't be on the field. If you're always in the training room, sorry. You got to go. Big disappointment. The Saints made a mistake. The Chicago Bears were right. You always wonder, if he's so good, why are they letting him get away? Why? Well, injury after injury, the Saints took a gamble. The gamble failed, but apparently there's some good wide receivers making some good plays. Maybe a new semi-Marcus Colston in the fray. Sean Fazan, Fox 8 New Orleans, will join us to talk about that. Jaqueline Roy, big defensive lineman from right in LSU's backyard. Remember, he had committed to LSU, then shocked everybody by decommitting, and he's making trips to Alabama. He's making trips to Texas A&M. He's going to Auburn. He's going left and right, and everybody's like, oh, my gosh, we're going to lose another one to Nick Saban. He's going to go like Ishmael Sopcich did. He's going to go. And Cam Robinson did on the offensive side. But no, on late Friday, around 6 o'clock, we saw that Hold That Tiger tweet from Ed Orgeron. Jaqueline Roy commits to LSU. He's another big get. Got to get him. LSU now up to 22 commitments. Jimmy Smith of Tiger Details will join us in hour number two to talk about what that means and who's left on the board. I'm telling you, the early signing period, LSU's going to close. They may get everybody. Now, they may lose one or two of these kids that are way out on the West Coast or way up in Baltimore, D.C. area, maybe. We'll see. So far, though, so good. Training camp opens up for LSU on Thursday. With that in mind, Brooks Cabina will join us, and we'll talk all about LSU football as they're getting ready and getting closer and closer to, I mean, what could be a sensational season. Speaking of a sensational season, former LSU Tiger, current Philadelphia Philly, is heating up. Aaron Nola, his last seven starts, a 1.51 ERA in 47 and two-thirds innings pitched, 55 strikeouts, only 28 hits, with a whip of 0.93. He's getting hot at the right time. And David Griffin says Zion Williamson is still growing. Yeah, he's passed up his teammate, his sidekick, that went to the New York Knicks. He's over 6'7 now and still growing. I'm not concerned about his weight at all, says David Griff. He keeps growing. He'll get in shape. He'll be good to go. He had a quarterback challenge with Drew Brees. I'm waiting to hear the results of that. Says he can throw a football 65 yards. I don't care about that. Can you shoot a basketball from 28 feet? That's what I want to know. I know you can shoot it from 3 feet and in, and you can do that with the best of them. Can you take it outside and knock down a three ball for me? That's the question. That is the question. All right. I know it's not a golf major, but Brooks Koepka won a golf tournament. He won the St. Jude Classic in Memphis. Yes, indeed, with a $2 million bonus prize to it. So Brooks Cabina, still making money. He's going to be the golfer of the year, without question, without doubt. Still no Michael Thomas signing, no Ezekiel Elliott signing, no Dak Prescott signing, no Joe Cooper signing. Everything's still going out there. Training camps are in full session, and we're getting closer and closer to things really getting interesting. All right, we'll take a time out here. When we come back, LSU Athletics saying, uh-uh. We're not going to be the guy giving you all this money anymore. We'll tell you the details, the whys, the why nots, and all of that next with the source that has the story. Tyler Nunez, Tiger Rag, joins us next here on the best darn radio station in Acadiana, and I'll put it up against anybody anywhere. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are your sports station. CD taking us to break. We'll be right back.
taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, our next guest doused some hot topics with gasoline. it's an interesting story that's in the Tiger Rag now, and Tyler Nunez is kind enough to join us. Things are changing as far as the athletic department is concerned, and he's going to explain why and why now. Tyler, thanks for the time, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jordy?
I'm terrific, man. Thanks so much for the time. You had to sit down with LSU Athletic Director Scott Woodward, and things are changing as far as policies are concerned with the athletic department in conjunction with the academic side of things. Let's explain it from your perspective.
Yeah, I think, if you weren't aware, LSU enacted a policy in 2012 in which it was transferring funds from the athletics department to the academic, to the university. And over the span of about 5 years, from 2012 to 2017, the original deal was for $36 million. What that turned into was $48 million, actually. And that has continued. What Scott Woodward said is that not only will it not continue, it really can't continue, at least not in its current form. They can't continue to give money the way they are, at the rate they are, and on an annual basis. He was pretty vague about what the plan will be moving forward, whether they will do it annually, but at a smaller amount, or if it will be an as-needed kind of basis. But he did seem to indicate that they will donate money to the university, just not the way it is now and not nearly as much money.
Yeah, I don't think they want to be held accountable for, okay, we're going to give you $8 million this year, and then come at the end of the year going, wait a minute. And it seems like this is all tied into that $28 million renovation to the Football Ops Center. Here's my thought process. You tell me if I'm wrong here, okay? You build this nutrition center, it costs a lot of money to buy that food, to pay for that staff, to provide this all the time. And I think they're looking at the bottom line going, wait a minute, we can't guarantee this anymore. We've got to see where, when the dust settles, where we are, right?
I think the concern is definitely partly they don't want to start seeing the athletics department go into the red because of the money that they're giving to the university. That's definitely the sense I got from Scott Woodward. I think also part of it is just they feel like it's not and Scott Woodward confirmed this. It's not the athletics department's job to bail out the university. You know, that's other people's job. So and Scott Woodward knows that. He was a lobbyist before he was an athletics director, and he knows. And some of this is probably posturing to a certain extent, but I think that for the most part, they just want to make sure that they're giving money to the university responsibly, and they're not putting themselves at danger of falling into the red, because you never know what's going to happen down the line, what kind of financial endeavors they might go for down the line that may or may not work out. So I think he's just playing it safe. They want to make sure that the athletics department is in good standing, and they also want to make sure that the university isn't relying on them for money.
Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag, kind enough to join us. And LSU was one of those rare commodities where they did give back. Not many athletic departments around the country ever do.
Correct. Yeah, they're one of very few. I think Texas and Nebraska have similar policies. And other universities give back on a again, kind of as an as-needed basis, but it's very rare for a university to have a policy in which it's donating, especially that much money to the university.
Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. It all ties in. You see beer and wine being sold in Tiger State. LSU's got to generate revenue. Coaches' contracts keep going up. Expenses, travel, equipment, it all keeps going up and up and up. They've got to generate things, and that ties in again with what I think is the fact that, hey, we don't know how much we're going to have at the end. We can't, like you said, we can't get in the red. We got to stay profitable because we don't know what kind of where expenses are going.
Right, and I think people ignore the fact that LSU is not the first program to announce a $28 million locker room facility. We see it happen all over the country year to year. It was Texas a couple years ago. I think it was Alabama a year before that. I mean, this is something you have to do if you want to keep up. And I understand the frustration, especially from a student perspective, seeing the disparity of resources between the university and across the street at the athletic department. But again, as Woodward said, it's not really the athletic department's job to keep the university afloat. That goes to the state, that goes to donors, that goes to a lot of things, but it's not really an auxiliary like the athletics department.
Kyle, I guess the next obvious question is, how does this manage the relationship between athletic director and his boss, the LSU president, F. King Alexander, who's like, you know, I sure would love the money, but you're telling me I don't get this money anymore. How do you think that's all going to settle?
No, I haven't talked to F. King Alexander personally about it, but I have to imagine that he understands. And I think from what he said recently, he seems to be on the same page. I think he also understands that LSU and the staff, F. King Alexander, doesn't want to be relying on this money either. They want to get their money from the state. They want to get their money from donors. They just have to figure out a way to do that. Obviously, the state's a little bit trickier than donors, but they could do a lot better on the academic donation front, and I think that's something that they're going to have to do, and that's something that they're going to have to hit hard. And F. King Alexander is one to challenge the state on funding. I mean, a couple years ago, he was right on the front lines of that. So I think he understands. I don't think there's going to be any resentment there. I don't think this is a big surprise to him. I think this has been in the works for a while.
I think there's a lot of people out there that are going to be misconceived by this and thinking that the athletic department will never give money again to the academic side.
Yeah,
but that's not the case.
No, yeah, and we even changed our headline on the story because of that. People were kind of running with it. It's very clear in the story I wrote. He left a lot of room in there to give money to LSU, and even said that, going as far as to say that at the time that LSU needs a new library, he'll be there. The athletics department will be there for support. So, and he didn't say that was going to be monetary, but you can infer that LSU is going to give money to the university, just as not as much and maybe not as often.
Man, we're ready for training camp, aren't we? I'm tired of all this money talk, right?
Absolutely.
I'm ready for guys to start catching the ball. Jeez.
Yeah, absolutely. I think camp starts Friday. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, they report on Thursday. We'll see how everybody looks. They'll do their conditioning tests and all that, and then it's, freshman, wherever Coach O is going to handle it this year. But what is your – speaking of on the field, what is your number one thing that you're looking to see when camp begins? What's your priority?
I think everybody wants to see what this new offense looks like, at least to some certain degree. We've heard a lot of talk about it. We've heard they're going to run a spread. We've heard they're going to run no huddle. I'm kind of curious to see how that works and what the position players look like. I'm also looking forward to seeing what young guys on defense look like. Apu Aika is a guy who impressed during the spring. Garrett Stingley Jr. comes in about as highly touted as an incoming freshman could be. So there's some individuals I'll be looking out for, but I think the main thing is that offense. I think everyone wants to know, is this for real? Because we've been promised this time and time again, but they've really kind of put all the chips on the table, so it seems like it's real, but I'm curious to see what it looks like on the field.
Tyler, I'm sorry to tell you this. You ain't going to see any of that until they kick it off for game one, because you're going to see a lot of stretching and this and that.
True.
You ain't going to see any of those plays, my friend. That's
fair
right,
enough,
but
do
me a favor.
You can kind of get a sense of what they're doing with individual drills sometimes.
Yeah, I want to see the running backs. I want to see those newcomers there. I want to see if this Cade York can kick it through the goalpost.
Yeah.
I know he can kick it far. I just want to see if he can kick it through the post and the official will hold his arms up. That's three. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg McMahon spoke very highly of him. He kind of faltered during the spring game. I think everyone was kind of wondering what was up with that, but I'm sorry, not during the spring game, but during drills. But he's he seems to be a very talented guy. He's Greg McMahon spoke very highly of him. Said he had a lot of qualities with previous LSU kickers, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does as well. Very interesting position.
No question. So as we wrap things up with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Egg, again, the big story coming out of LSU is the fund transfer policy that was initiated by Joe Oliva will no longer be in its present form. LSU will continue to contribute to the academic side of things, but how and how much we're not sure of, but they ain't going to be given no $50 million anymore. I can tell you that.
No, not over a span of five. Yeah, there were years where they gave over $10 million. I don't see that happening anymore. Not at all.
Yeah, not unless they sell a whole buku of beer and have this windfall. Well, we shall see, but go ahead. Tyler, I can't thank you enough. Welcome to Tiger Rag. You do a terrific job, and thanks for coming on the show. We'd love to have you on again, my friend.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks a lot, Jordy. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Our pleasure. We appreciate it greatly. So there you have it. It's changed with the new athletic director. They want to put their stamp on things. And I understand it completely. Expenses go up, man. Go up. And you got to be able to justify. Joe Oliva, that was one of the things that he was very, very proud of. And that's great. You can give that kind of money. LSU will continue to give. But those dollar amounts, I just don't see it. It costs a lot. That food bill every day, that electricity bill in that building, I'm telling you, it just keeps going up and up and up. So they're hoping for sold-out stadium seats. They're hoping for lots of beer sales, baby. Lots of it. No problem down yonder because their owner is worth about $3 billion. We'll get the latest from Saints training camp next with Sean Fazan, Fox 8 New Orleans, here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. We're on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, and 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game.
Well, it's 4 days down in the New Orleans Saints training camp, and boy, the wide receiver position seems to be getting all the attention. Some good, some not so good. Let's head down to the Big Easy. Sean Fazan does a tremendous job for Fox 8 New Orleans. He covers the Saints as one of his many, many duties, and Sean joins us now. Wow, the wide receiver position, the big story, Cam Meredith, gone, no longer. I guess the best ability is availability, Sean.
I think you hit the nail right on the head with that, Jordy. Look, the most disappointing thing I saw in the offseason training program was when I walked out on the field and to view practice, and 81 was off to the side working with trainers. Ole was not there at all. His health was an issue. He was not available. He was at the first three practices at training camp, made minimal impact, and then the emergence of younger players. You know, Simi Cobb is a good player. Traquan Smith has obviously got a flash last year, but the guy that's really turned heads has been Emmanuel Butler. And they're pretty similar in terms of their style of play, their size, and just frankly, he's just a player that the Saints are starting to really, really notice. And Cam Meredith is just kind of fading into the background. And look, injuries were an issue when they signed him. It turns out the Bears probably were right on that decision, and he's no longer a Saint.
Sean Fazan, Fox 8 New Orleans, kind enough to join us. All right, one day I say that's fine. 2 days, okay. But it seems like every day Emmanuel Butler, and he's not going up against chicken liver. He's going up against the best the Saints have to offer defensively, keeps making plays. What it is about this guy?
Yeah, he's on the same page with whatever quarterback starting the ball, whether it's Taysom, Teddy, or obviously Drew had another great day today. That's 4 days in a row now, and I was kind of with you, all right. I saw him, I saw him have a pretty good practice without pads Friday. Then I saw another one Saturday. But these back-to-back solid practices with pads on against Marshawn Lattimore in coverage or Eli Apple in coverage certainly has got all of us to take notice. And look, every year there's an unknown undrafted guy that just works his way onto the radar. And this year, that player is Emmanuel Butler. You know, the comparisons to Colston, I don't want to. You know, jump the gun and say he's going to be the next Colston, but he's got he's similar in size. He's got great hands, and he's got tremendous body control for a big guy, much like Colston did. You know, we kind of picture him going over the middle or kind of going up and catching that back shoulder throw the way he would just kind of use his body to shield the defender. Emmanuel Butler has those similar traits, and I think he's a guy the Saints coaching staff absolutely loves right now.
Sean Farzan, Fox 8, New Orleans. Four training camp sessions in the books. I'm dying to know about the chemistry between Drew Brees and his new tight end and Jared Cook coming in from the Raiders. How's that look so far?
Phenomenal. And I don't say that word lightly. I don't throw that word around. The chemistry has really picked up, especially over the first couple of days of practices. It almost felt like in certain drills, Drew is pinpointing Cook, regardless of the covers, just to develop that rapport, which goes to show you the mindset of a guy like Brees. Cook had another great day today. There was a play where they split him out wide. He had Von Bell matched up on him. Cook ran a go route. Brees didn't hesitate, threw it to him. Easy completion, big gain. I would be thoroughly disappointed if Cook does not have a big year, just because you can just imagine – what they're going to do with him within this offense. And he's caught on very quickly. He's a veteran, a savvy veteran, and he is a big man, Jordy. He has got, I mean, he is 6'5", 6'6", every bit of it. I mean, he is, and he knows how to use that big body, a more natural football player than Jimmy Graham was, and look how great he was within this offense. So I think Jared Cook signing is going to be worth it.
Opens up the field. Michael Thomas still holding out, but we saw the formula. Dallas kind of did it. Some other teams late in the year kind of did it. You take him away, you double him up. It's nice to have that guy that can get down the middle of the field and provide a big target. That's key, I think.
Absolutely, and it really was a staple of his offense for years. Up until Jimmy Graham left, and they've kind of been searching for that guy that can work the seams in the middle of the field. And they've tried a few players, and they just haven't been able to hit on anyone. But it looks like Jared Cook, at least right now, and it's early, but at least right now, certainly appears to be the next player in line to take over that role.
Sean, Cam Meredith's move corresponds with the signing, it seems like, of offensive lineman Patrick Omame. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but why the signing of another offensive lineman? Is that something I need to worry about?
No, I think there was a little bit of concern about the backup swing tackle position. You had a guy like Michael Ola. I'm forgetting his name. But basically, you're solid along the interior, at least when it comes to depth. Obviously, you have your two starting guards, Pete and Warford, and you have the center battle between McCoy, Tom, and Nick Easton. And you also have a guy like Will Clapp. So I think you're pretty solid along the interior of that offensive line, both as a starter, both the starters and with depth. And I think they were a little bit concerned about that swing tackle position, just because in a perfect world, should something happen to a guy like Armstead who's missed time in the past, you don't necessarily have to flex Pete out to play left tackle, because I think they'd prefer him at that left guard. So it really is just a matter of trying to rebuild some depth along the offensive line, the edges of the offensive line. I think the interior of the offensive line is really deep.
Sean Farzan, Fox 8, New Orleans. So many people talk about the last two seasons, how they ended, how this would emotionally affect this club. What do you sense attitude-wise, work ethic-wise, chemistry-wise, so far from the outside looking in?
Love it. It's I'll borrow my good buddy Jeff Duncan's term on our show last night. Very businesslike, very straightforward, very matter-of-fact, very – let's get in. Let's get the task. Let's accomplish that task. Let's move on to the next thing. There's a very deliberate, straightforward approach. There's no real wasted motion. There's no real rah-rah emotion. There's no real motivational gimmicks. It's very much, let's get in, let's get our work done, and let's move on to the next day. And if you look at this roster, you know, it's a lot of guys back. I mean, a lot of guys back from the last two seasons. So, I don't think I've ever seen a camp where it already feels like they've moved past the getting to know phase, and they're already on the intricate details of within the offense and the defense and situationally with Brees and other players. Normally, that first week at camp, you still kind of feel each other out a little bit, but now, I mean, you're already 2-3 days in. You're already starting to see the subtle details kind of take shape within his offensive defense.
So with that being said, Sean Farzan, Fox 8, New Orleans, what is the biggest – you know, your kicking game is great. Your return game, it looks like it's going to be in pretty good hands there. What is your biggest area of concern with this club?
You know, the secondary was a little inconsistent last year. I thought Lattimore – start off the season was not the same player he was his rookie year. I thought he finished strong. I thought the addition of Eli Apple was good. I thought, you know, he had his moments where he had some lapses in coverage, but I think overall that was an upgrade. They addressed the nickel position. They get P.J. Williams back, who was the incumbent last year when Patrick Robinson went down. He's back as well. And he also drafted the kid, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who looks like a nickel player as well. You know, and look, Von Bell was improved last year. I thought Marcus Williams was okay. I think overall as a whole, the secondary could play a little bit better, but they addressed those needs. Yeah, I think the line of scrimmage along the defensive line, maybe you can use another edge player for depth purposes. I like the linebacker group. They're strong. I think overall it's hard to find a flaw. It really is. I mean, other than the center battle, whether there's no incumbent coming back and there truly is a starting position that's open, there really aren't that many question marks with this team. It's just a matter of getting to the season. Hopefully you stay healthy and just going from there.
I mean, it seems like it's a good camp. Any skirmishes yet? I mean, have we had a training camp come to blows yet, or is this all kumbaya?
First one today, as a matter of fact.
Trey Hendrickson. Who was it?
Trey Hendrickson, who's no stranger to mixing it up, and the rookie, Alize Mack. A little bit of a dust-up, lasted a few minutes. You know, it's training camp. It happens. And a little extra hitting. I think it was on the 9-on-7 drill. Got broken up. Practice moved on. It was early in the practice. And, that's normal when it comes to training camp.
Absolutely.
So, Trey Hendrickson and Alize Mack, the honors go to those two for the first skirmish of camp.
No Mark Ingram. So, how's the running back position besides Alvin Kamara looking in your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like Latavius Murray. Didn't practice today. He's a very specific style of runner, a very specific kind of plays you run for a guy like that, that outside stretch play that he really excels at. I don't know that he is a natural between the tackles runner like Mark Ingram was, or a slasher like Mark Ingram was. He's a taller guy, a longer guy. You know, Divino Zigbo, he caught my eye the first couple of days with his ability to kind of see the open field and cut. But, you know, if I was kind of handicapping it, I would say right now in that running back room, the third running back, with there is a, you know, a spot open there. I would go with a guy like Dwayne Washington right now. Got good open field vision, can cut back, and more importantly, he can play a little special teams. So I think he's a guy that certainly is certainly warranted more touches when, you know, when practice rolls around. But, you know, they looked at Theo Riddick. He left town without a contract. Maybe he's taking his time, maybe not. So clearly they're keeping their eyes open on what's available at that position. But outside of Kamara and Latavius Murray, I'd say it's a pretty good battle between a guy like Dwayne Washington, Divino Zigbo, and Matt Days is another player that has played as well.
Well, these make for some long hour days for you, don't they? My goodness gracious.
It's long, but you know what? It's that time of year. We turn the page in late July, and away we go. So it's always fun, though.
I just want to see if Zion can throw the ball 65 yards like he professes he can.
I wouldn't doubt it. Hey, I wouldn't hold any. I wouldn't bet against it. They did the QB challenge there. I haven't a chance to see it yet, so I guess we'll check that out.
Check it out. Sean Fazan, Fox 8 New Orleans, thank you so much, my friend. Go take care of yourself, man. Be good.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Sean Fazan, Fox 8 New Orleans, with that New Orleans Saints update brought to you by ShopRite, Tobacco Plus discount outlets with over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. Just walk in, you'll see specials left and right, all kind of great discounts on all kind of great products, everything you need under the sun under one roof. ShopRite, Tobacco Plus discount outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. Back to wrap up hour number one next.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, 48 minutes after the hour, welcome back. Already one casualty in the NFL. Miami Dolphins have fired offensive line coach Pat Flaherty and replaced him with Dave DeGuglielmo. Flaherty was hired in February, shortly after Brian Flores took over as the head coach, but the Dolphins' offensive line has struggled throughout spring and summer, so This was a football based with nothing to do with an off the field incident, but already changes. No such changes at Saints camp other than Cam Meredith was shown the door. The best ability is availability. He was never available, and Cam Meredith cut amid a comeback from yet another injury. And one head that keeps on, one player that keeps on turning heads, rather, is the undrafted rookie Emmanuel Butler. All 6'4" of him reminds some people of a young Marcus Colston. Head coach Sean Payton had this to say about Emmanuel Butler.
There's someone that, you know, he's kind of been intriguing. So he's made a play, a couple plays each day. He's big, and I'm excited.
He's excited. Sammy Cobbs is also doing some good things in training camp. We talked with Sean Fasano about the chemistry between Breeze and Jared Cook. So got to find somebody. Michael Thomas is going to get signed. He's got to find somebody to go along the way of them. One former player was a track star at LSU, Cyril Grayson. He's a speedster. Sean Payton talked about the transition, and does he have a shot?
He made a play yesterday inside that was a good play. He can run. So I think, you know, look, as camp continues here and we get into the preseason, we'll have a chance to see, you know, specifically, you know, how can he help us, you know, on offense, and how can he help us in the kicking game?
He's speed, man. He is fast as lightning. One of the acquisitions, Malcolm Brown, University of Texas player, went to the drafted by the New England Patriots. I'm always curious is when players go from one team to another, the Patriots, such a level of excellence year in and year out. Malcolm Brown, cut number two, talked about the similarities between the Saints and the Pats.
Definitely. I mean, work hard. We get out here grinding every day. Everybody's doing their job. I mean, it's going unsaid, but everybody knows what it's supposed to be, and they're being there, and everybody's out here working, grinding every day.
Working and grinding every day. Curious to see the progression of Taysom Hill, the Swiss Army knife for the Saints. Does a little bit of everything. Kicking game, special teams, backup quarterback, running back, wide receiver. Does a little bit of everything. Sean Payton was asked, where has Taysom Hill improved going into this camp?
Well, his grasp of the offense, his ability to take the play into the huddle, out to the line of scrimmage, you know, get us in the right play. I thought he threw the ball, you know, pretty well the last couple of days. So, and then the things that are harder to see are the things that can happen in a game when a play breaks down and you know, he can advance it. But he's doing well.
Taysom Hill talked about his, you know, look, it's very easy when you have a Drew Brees and a Teddy Bridgewater to give them all the reps, and maybe Taysom Hill gets clumped over it. Well, he's going to do special teams. He's going to have one or two special plays on the offense, but he talked about cut number two of Hill, how the coaching staff really wants him to improve as a quarterback.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, I've been a quarterback since I was a little guy, and that's mm-hmm. always been the end goal and the end opportunity. So I want to play quarterback. You know, Coach Payton and the other guys on staff have made it clear that they care a lot about my progression at the quarterback position, which gives me a lot of pride. So that's definitely a priority for me, making sure that, you know, I stay up on all the other things that I'm asked to do.
He's a they love him. Teammates love him. He's just a football player, plain and simple. One rookie turning heads in training camp, besides Emmanuel Butler on the offensive side, is the rookie safety from Florida, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He has made plays. Everyone that's been there has said every day he makes another play. Here's defensive coordinator Dennis Allen talking about the rookie safety.
You know, I think one of the things is he's a versatile athlete. You know, so there's a lot of things that he can do and do well. The key is really going to be how well does he get acclimated to the things that we're asking him to do How much can he absorb mentally? You know, and that'll probably dictate, you know, the volume and the amount that we can get him involved in the defense. So I think it's probably, you know, probably a little early to speculate as to how much or exactly what role that is. But yet, I do think that that's a talented athlete that we can utilize.
The spot for him in certain situations, he's a player, no question about that. Heading into year number two, boy, they're expecting an awful lot out of their number one pick from a year ago, and that's Marcus Davenport. Played at UTSA, big defensive end, pass rusher. When he was healthy, he was really, really good. But again, the injury bug hit him. Here's Dennis Allen on the expectations year two of Marcus Davenport.
Well, look, I think I can see a little bit mentally where he's at. He's a little bit more confident in himself. I think that comes with familiarity with the defense and the things that we're going to ask him to do. You know, he fought through the injury last year, which I think limited him some. I think the big thing for him is, you know, I don't think we need to put any outside expectations on him. You know, I think he needs to focus on, you know, his day-to-day improvement, continuing to get better, because he's plenty talented enough to be a good player in this league. And I think don't worry about what the end result's going to be. Just worry about the day-to-day improvement, and that'll take care of itself, really.
They're expecting good things. You may not hear it, and Dennis Allen kind of downplaying it, but, man, they are expecting and want a lot out of him. One of the keys of this team, I think, is a linebacker group. You got to get Alex Anzalone to have a full, healthy season. But Craig Robertson, one of the integral pieces to this group, talked about the camaraderie, the family that the linebacker groups are.
You know, it comes to the point, I'm the old guy, you know, I'm the longest tenure, which is crazy. But it's now get to a point where we want everybody to win. And it's not like that everywhere. You don't get that. In training camp, you got guys that just, I want to do good, you know, so coach can see me do good. But we don't have that. It's more so like, hey, man, like you're helping other guys, you're coaching other guys, especially the young guys, because we've been in this defense a long time. Like, I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of plays, so I can help a lot of the young guys. And now WD is now going to the second year, and Alex has been here. So it's like just as us banging ideas off of each other is really what makes us better players altogether.
Double D, DeMario Davis. Sean Payton summed it all up. It's great when you're in shorts and T-shirts and running around, but when you put the pads on, different story.
Yeah, it's different. You know, you're able to do more things that really are specific to the game. So clearly it's different. It was a little bit warmer. Thought we managed the heat okay. But, yeah, I think the level of the type of practice you have changes once you're in full gear.
More to come on the New Orleans Saints. Hour number one's in the books. We'll tell you what's coming up in hour number two after Hot Topics. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Brought to you by Hooters, National Chicken Wing Day. All you can eat for only $15.99. Head to Hooters. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two, and away we go on this Monday, the last Monday of the month of July. 29 days in, two to go. Then we turn the calendar to August, 33 days until they kick it off in Tiger Stadium. Darius Geis is back with the Washington Redskins, looking good. And Greedy Williams keeps making play after play after play. He's going to lock down a starting spot in the Cleveland Browns secondary, which is, I guess, LSU Midwest, right, with Landry and Beckham and now Greedy and company. So, anyway, training camps are underway. Cam Meredith cut for the Saints. That's the big news coming down from Airline Drive. Yes, indeed. This hour of the program brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, about 62 of them throughout the state. And there's a reason for it, because they provide everything you need for whatever you need. And the service is great, clean, and everything for your travels. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. All right, CD, let's take that daily walk around the sports water cooler. Button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
How was your weekend, my friend? I'm glad you're back from all the wings you could eat at Hooters. Glad to have you back, buddy.
Oh, man, Jordy, I barely got back into the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I think I might need a nap after this is all said and done, Jordy. And with National Chicken Week. Go ahead, Jordy.
You got it. You deserve it. Go for it.
All right, Jordy, starting things off, we got to keep the thing going with National Chicken Wing Day, Jordy. So are you team blue cheese or are you team ranch?
Oh, I'm flexible. I really am. I used to be nothing but blue cheese. Now I'm leaning toward the ranch. I like the sweet and hot kind of wings. But I'm more ranch at this time in my life. Yes.
You and about 57% of America, because Sunday Night Football on NBC put this out just about an hour ago about National Chicken Wing Day, giving it to the Buffalo Bills, obviously. But they wound up putting it out, are y'all team blue cheese or team ranch? And team ranch taking a commanding lead, 57%. Me, I'm more on the blue cheese side of things. And apparently Sunday Night Football on NBC is questioning the judgment of hashtag team ranch. But, Jordy, you know,
team ranch. I'm flexible. I can go either way. I really can.
That's awesome, Jordy. But, of course, we got to talk about what's going on in the world of college football to start off. What's really going on in the world of sports, Hot Topics. With Alabama and Wisconsin scheduled a home-and-home earlier today, 2024 and 2025 at Wisconsin in 2024, and then it'll be in a T-Town in 2025. Man, Jordy, that definitely is going to be intriguing what's going to happen with those two programs down the road, because you can about imagine by 2024, the Nictator will no longer be the Nictator in Bama.
You think?
I think so. 2024, that's a long ways away, Jordy.
That's a ways down. Yeah, you never know. He's in good shape. I like the fact I'm a big proponent of the home and home scenarios. I don't like the neutral site games. I never have. I understand what they lend. I understand all that. But I much prefer the home and home thing. I'd love to see LSU go to Tallahassee. I'd love to see Florida State come to Baton Rouge, that type of thing. You want to make a bet on whether Nick's still coaching 6 years from now?
I'd say I'm a couple chicken wings and I'm a bottle of Coke would work.
I'll give you a whole bottle of blue cheese dressing to go with. How about that? Okay.
That sounds good, Jordy. I'll give you a whole bottle of ranch if you're correct.
I'm trying to convince my daughters to let's go get some wings tonight. I mean, I'm trying. We'll see.
I mean, you only got a couple more weeks till school's back in session, right, Jordy?
Yeah, less than a couple. You're right. It's coming. Sheesh.
School's a lot like at Odrum. We coming.
We coming, baby. We coming. I like that.
All right, Jordy, moving over to the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, the big story coming out today. Cam Meredith, he gone. No surprise there, Jordy, when you just think about it. You talked about it a lot. It's availability, but more importantly, Jordy, a lot of these young wide receivers, thanks in large part to Mike Thomas not being there, we're seeing those guys get a lot more run and a lot more reps. How huge is that for these guys?
No question. That tells me that that they feel very good with where they are at this point in time. If they weren't, they'd have kept on holding on for Cam Meredith and let him get through training camp and see what happens. But that's great news as far as I'm concerned with the depth of the wide receiver core. So long, Cam. The Browns, I mean the Bears, beat us on that one. They were smarter than the Saints were.
They were definitely smarter than the Saints were, but you know what, Jordy, that's just the way it goes sometimes. Thankfully, you've got a lot of depth at that position. But moving over to the MLB, Jordy, a big trade happened last night with the New York Mets somehow, some way acquiring Marcus Stroman. A big surprise there in my mind. Same with you?
Yeah, wow. They're no good. Why are they picking up a pitcher for two of their highly coveted prospects? And they're going to get rid of a couple of other pitchers. I don't understand what the Mets are doing. I really don't.
I don't even think the Mets understand what they're doing, but I think the next thing that needs to happen is, obviously, the next shoe to drop is going to wind up being Thor. He's going to wind up being the guy.
Syndergaard.
Noah Syndergaard. Yeah, he's the next one gone. Yeah. But where does he go, Jordy?
Houston? They want him? I don't know. Somebody wants him.
I would have much rather Stroman, to be honest with you.
I want Bauer, the guy from Cleveland. You see his arm?
I don't think that would work, Jordy.
The center field wall from the pitching mound. You saw that?
I saw that. It was amazing. It was amazing, Jordy, but I just don't necessarily think it would work. From what I've heard, Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer, a lot of bad blood, not just stuff all in the field. It's a little off the field. I don't think that would necessarily work out. Again, I was in the Marcus Stroman camp. I'm kind of surprised at that. But do you think, like, we're getting closer to the trade deadline? Do you think they even make a move at all?
No telling, man. Who knows? All I know is the Astros beat my Cardinals 2 out of 3.
Yeah!
And look, you heard those clips. The Yankees keep on winning. The Twins keep on winning. The Astros. I mean, it's a race in the American League. Those are three really, really good teams.
I'm just glad the Astros beat the Cardinals, Jordy, to be quite honest with you, because you do have that 2005 NLCS over us, and that a lot like the Nolan no-call will never go away for me.
I'm happy for the Astros. I really am. But just take a look at all those world championships. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
I know, Jordy. I know. One day we'll keep up with you, Jordy. But last one here, real quick, Jordy. Steve Ballmer apparently is open to changing the Los Angeles Clippers name. Is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard? Like, this is an established name. Yes, they're looking to change. He's open to changing the Clippers name. Why is that even a thing?
I have no earthly clue. I guess when you're worth billions and billions, you can just come up with whatever you want. I don't know what he's going to call them. The Clippers. Yeah, all right. Anyway, there's your Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet for the Biart family in New Iberia, right there in St. Martinville. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Recruiting update next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Humpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, let's get some recruiting updates. What a big, big weekend it was for LSU as what many declare as the number one prospect in the state. Chose LSU over Alabama and Texas A&M. Let's get the skinny from Jimmy Smith, the architect of Tiger Details, kind enough to join us now. Jimmy, how are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you, brother?
I'm great. So tell me the significance of Jaquelin Roy, the defensive lineman from University High, the lab school, coming to LSU over Alabama and A&M. What does that mean, not only internally, but from an outside world perspective?
Yeah, it's really a huge commitment on multiple fronts. Regardless how you dissect this thing, it's really big for LSU. Anytime you keep the top prospects in the state, which is what's led to this rise in the LSU football program over the last couple of decades, that's a huge win. To beat your arch nemesis both on the field and recruiting trail in Alabama for a kid in Baton Rouge, they've been fairly successful in the Baton Rouge area. Alabama has recruited that area for the last handful of years. And then the significance of the position, defensive line, a position LSU really needs some impact players in this class, and a position that Alabama's beat them head up on with guys like Kadarian Mathis and most recently Ishmael Topshire from a meet last year. head up in the recruiting trail. So to be able to go check all those boxes and declare victory in all those regards for Ed Orgeron's staff, really big commitment. And this is a kid, Jordy, that's probably going to step on the field right away and make an impact in an LSU uniform.
Yeah, Rashard Lawrence will be gone. Braden Fajoco will be gone. You study tape more so than anybody. Talk about this kid. What does he provide? Because the LSU's been after some really good defensive linemen for years now. What does he bring?
Yeah, I'm going to look at it from the perspective of what LSU does. He's a really scheme versatile, position versatile guy first and foremost. That's 6'4", a lean 280, 285 pounds. He has a frame and quickness combination to play in multiple fronts at multiple positions. In the 3-4 alignment, you know, I think you look at him as a guy that could play on either side, the Glenn Logan spot or the Rashard Lawrence spot, can shoot some gaps. He has the kind of quickness and bend to kind of beat some linemen on the edge, on the outside. His pass rushing ability, uses his hands well, plays with a good forward lean, can get a tad high at times. That looks to be a stamina issue, I think, when he's on the field a lot for U High. You see him playing a little high at times, but he's really going to get Dave Aranda a lot as he develops as a player. You know, probably play under 300 pounds at the next level. A lean 290, 295 pounds is probably his projected weight, I would guess. And he's a guy that's going to be able to come in and perform and probably have the options to go to the NFL a year early. That's the kind of impact player you're looking at in Jaquale Roy.
Still got a Jimmy Detail, Jimmy Smith. I guess I always call you Detail because you pay attention to the details, and that's why you're so good at what you do with Tiger Details. Must read material when it comes to recruiting. So that's 22 in the books for me. They never keep all 22, do they? There's going to be a defection here and there, or am I not accurate there?
I mean, there are. You know, especially when you're recruiting nationally the way they are this year, you've got four players from the DMV, from the Maryland, Virginia area. You've got guys from the West Coast. You've got guys all over the place in this 22-man class for LSU. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, yeah, the risk of a possible decommitment or two is probably high just when you look at history. But they've done a really good job. This staff's very diligent in staying on top both their commitments and top prospects that they're recruiting. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they signed all 22 of these guys. I do think there could be some shuffling in numbers if some other guys, if four or five more premier prospects want to come into the class, they can only sign a max of 25, so they might have to juggle some things there to make the numbers work. So you could see some guys kind of get pushed out in a sense. Hate to use the kind of verbiage, but it is what it is in the recruiting game these days. So there's a lot that could happen, but I think they signed a large portion of these guys, especially if they win 10, 11 games on the field this year, which I personally believe they will. They should be able to finish strong with one of the premier classes in the country.
Seems like it's Alabama or Clemson, LSU, Georgia, Ohio State. Those seem to be the five. And it seems like LSU has really gotten to the point where their name goes outside of the SEC brand, and it's gone nationally, and they've leaned on that more so this year than any year that I really can recall.
Yeah, you know, and something, you know, as someone that's covered LSU for a while now and been involved in recruiting, it's something I thought they should have always done. They've really relied heavily on Texas and Louisiana and maybe plucking a guy from Florida here or there and really haven't branched out and made an impact on the East Coast and in the Maryland area or in New Jersey or some of the talent-rich places in Pennsylvania and on the West Coast. And they seem to be trying that this year, and that's part of Ed Orgeron's brand. This is the guy that was the head coach at Ole Miss, Tennessee, at USC on an interim basis. You know, spent a lot of time in Miami. He's got experience and connections everywhere, and he's kind of built his staff that way, too. It's not as Louisiana heavy as you've had in years past on staff. So this has kind of been the end result. They've been very successful doing so we're probably going to see more of it in the future. And you know, why stop if it's working for you?
Jimmy Smith, Tiger Details, talking LSU football recruiting. Who's left in the state that, Roy was a must-get. Is there another must-get in the state that's still left uncommitted?
You know, I would think there's a handful of guys that I think when you're LSU, you simply can't let these caliber of prospects leave, especially for rival programs. A guy like Jacobian Guillory, defensive tackle, a nose guard type in an LSU scheme, really powerful, explosive kid at 320 pounds. He's a kid they're head up with in Alabama. I think they're in a good position to land him. Won't know until later in the recruiting cycle. A pair of teammates from Warren Easton, offensive center, Cedric Van Praan, who's phenomenal. I think with Lloyd Cushenberry, likely ending up in the NFL draft next year. I think it would be good to bring in a guy like him, especially when you have Cole Smith, who just transferred to Mississippi State. And so it'd be good to land him and his running back teammate, Ashad Johnson, who's a dynamic running back, and LSU needs one in this class. And he's very high on LSU as well. And Corey Moore, wide receiver from Rummel, simply too good to pass up. They have a lot of good receivers committed in this class, but Corey Moore is a technician. He's a guy you have to get involved with on the recruiting trail, and they seem to be leading for him coming down the stretch here. So there's a handful of in-state prospects that they're really in the mix for. Ultimately, they can only sign, as things stand now, three more at most, unless some juggling happens, which is probable at this point.
He is Jimmy Detail from Tiger Details talking about this LSU football recruiting class. What about the running back from Houston? Maybe the top running back prospect in the country. He's come down for a visit. You got Emory. You got these other players. Is that just got any bite to it?
Yeah, I mean, Zach Evans, the guy you're referring to, is the guy LSU's been on for quite some time. It looked like he's had leaders that might have been Georgia at one point, might have been Alabama at one point. LSU's always kind of hovered around on his leaderboard. Now they're surging late, making a push for him. He was in town with his teammate recently. You know, a lot of people think he's leaning towards Alabama. I'm starting to think, you know, Texas A&M might be the big threat here down the stretch for LSU. Phenomenal running back, and if you could follow a class like LSU had last year with Tyrell Davis from Southern Lab and Destrahan's John Emory, two phenomenal prep running backs, if you can follow it with a guy like Zach Evans, you're really cooking with gas at that point. And that's what Edwards around the staff are trying to do is to give their offense as many weapons, as many dynamic players as possible to be productive. Right.
Jimmy, I read a quote from Jaqueline Roy that said, "Yeah, the facilities are nice, but man, it's home. That's the main thing. It was home for me." So, with that being said, all the bells and whistles in your mind as being a recruiting analyst and one of the best in the business, how much does that play? That $28 million renovation. How much significance is that?
You know, I think anybody could think about it within the vacations they've taken in the past, right? And some of the amenities that maybe some of the places offered you, whether it be the hotel or the experience itself in the town, and when you weigh it all out, it just becomes a part of the big picture for these kids. And when they come in for these 24 to 72 hour windows to get a feel for LSU's campus and LSU school, there's only so many opportunities you have to leave a lasting impression. And facilities like that, I mean, we're talking something that looks like it's out of a spaceship, right? So when you're talking something like that, I mean, of course that's going to leave a lasting impression. It might not be high on a kid's priority list for facilities as far as what school they want to choose, assuming most of the top programs have premier facilities. But again, you're looking to make an impression during those short recruiting windows on those visits. And that certainly makes a positive impact.
Well, leave on this note. It seems to me for the first time since they implemented the early signing period, LSU may sign 90% of their class early on. Are you agreeing?
Yeah. Man, this is pretty crazy stuff, you know, and I think it's – and when you look across, I mean, Alabama's at 22 commitments. Clemson, I believe, is at 18, but they're probably only going to end with 21. Ohio State, I believe, has 22 commitments. Georgia starting to surge. I believe they have 16 now, might have 19 by the end of the week. This seems to be the trend. You know, they moved up the early signing period, began a couple of years ago in December, a week before Christmas. And now you kind of see, this is what's developing here, is everything's moving ahead of schedule, and you see these classes filling up, and kids are starting to feel the squeeze as well, making early commitments as these classes fill, and it's kind of changed the whole dynamics of recruiting.
Heck, you might be able to plan a Valentine's Day getaway or something. My gosh. I mean, that February period might be nothing.
I'm telling you, you know, every year July seems to be the month where we can sneak in a little vacation time, right? And January is always hectic leading up to the first week of February and signing day. But last year, January was rather dead. And meanwhile, I had no plans. And so this year, you know, if everything shakes out, I might be able to sneak in an extra vacation in January. So, and that's think I'm gonna be selfish and hope LSU closes strong so I can sit back and have a relaxing January.
Jimmy Detail, thanks for the insight. A great get for LSU, Jaquelin Roy. He might see the field. He'll probably see the field immediately as a true freshman. He's that type of a ball player. And anytime you can beat Alabama in something, that's better than nothing. Jimmy, thank you, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Always a blast, Jordy. Thank you, brother.
All right, Jimmy Detail from Tiger Details. Back with LSU reporting to camp on Thursday. Brooks Cabina of the Advocate will go position group by position group. Strengths, weaknesses, and they're loaded. We'll be right back.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
The next big thing at LSU is Thursday. That's when players report and the grind known as training camp begins with the college football season right around the corner. Let's get a little preview of things from the mind and eyes of Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, who's kind enough to join us. Brooks, enjoying your last few days of freedom, buddy? How are you?
I'm fine. I'm trying to make it last.
Well, I certainly appreciate the time here. A lot of questions going to this, great expectations, obviously. Everything seems to be on an uptick. The storylines, I guess that my major concern, one is offensive line, backup center, depth along the line. Where do you see the offensive line hanging into the training camp? Is that one of the main things that you're looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, that is the biggest question about maybe the entire team going into this season is how well will that offensive line perform in comparison to last year? I mean, last year they ranked outside of the top 100 in both sacks allowed and tackles for loss allowed. That's not very good. And it also prompted a change on the offensive philosophy where they're actually trying to get the ball out of the hands of Joe Burrow quicker to alleviate some of the time that blockers have to hold defenders. So maybe that'll help a little bit, but still you've got to perform much better than that to be an effective offense. And depending where they're at this year with the offensive line, that's certainly something. So you look at where their positions are. At center and right guard, LSU is more than capable. Lloyd Cushenberry at center has experience from last year. He actually made first team all SEC preseason. Damian Lewis at right guard was consistent. He made all SEC preseason second team. Like, both of those guys have earned respect from not only the media but other people around the SEC as consistent guys that anybody would want starting on their team. The rest of it is still being filled out. The left tackle, Sadiq Charles, is going to be a third-year starter, but he struggled at times last year, and at least having consistency and maturity should benefit him going into this year. The rest is filling out. So left guard, in the spring, that was Adrian McGee, who shifted over from right tackle to left guard in the spring to kind of make up for the loss of Garrett Brumfield, who's gone to the NFL. He's kind of who I would peg to be the starter going into camp, but Jason Hines, who started a few games last year at left guard while Brumfield was injured, he went through an off-season surgery and was recovering during the whole spring. So how fast does he catch up to push McGee at left guard? And over at right tackle, Austin Deculus used to be an interior guy. He started at right tackle in the spring, and he's supposed to be pushed by Bedeira Traor, and he was a big JUCO pickup last year, and he just didn't adapt to the game at the Division I SEC level as well as he could. So does he finally take that next step in this preseason camp? That's going to be a big influence on whether this offensive line is successful or not.
First, Cabana, kind enough to join us. I worry, heaven forbid, knock on wood, if there's an injury, who's the backup center? Because the guy that was the backup's in the transfer portal.
No, that's true. They've actually, you know, that's actually a good question because, you know, they have a new recruit from this year, a true freshman that came in, and he would be the guy, but he's not as bulked up quite yet. He's around 240 listed on the chart. But you've kind of made a good point there, and they have somebody shifting around, and that'll be something to look at going into preseason because last year there was the question of whether Lloyd Cushenberry would actually play center the whole season. You know, that was so he turned out to be a big surprise anyway. But there are, you know, there have been players who they thought might shift over. You know, who knows if that might be an Adrian McGee or a Chasen Hines that they might try and go there. But depth is certainly a question.
Brooks, we saw a little bit of this. I think LSU thought Central Florida was going to blitz them more than they did. So Steve Ensminger basically put in this get rid of the ball quick. And you saw the offense in the bowl game put up some really, really nice numbers. I think that was the harbinger of things to come. They don't have to be as dominating as maybe before. They just need to be pretty good for a little bit of time and then get rid of the football, right? I mean, that's kind of the new nomenclature.
Well, that worked against Central Florida. And, you know, as good as that defense was in some capacity in their season, you know, the defensive line isn't as strong as what they're going to see in the SEC coming up this season, especially Texas's front is also very, very good. So, you know, and the big part of this also, yes, they can get the passing game off pretty quick, but part of this run-pass option offense is the run game. You know, you have to be able to split 50-50. The whole point of the run-pass option is you read a dangerous defender that's going to become a blitzer and mess things up in the run. If you don't establish the run, then the defense isn't going to send extra people in the first place.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, the offensive line is trouble there, too, if it's not good in the run blocking as well. So, you know, that's another key piece of that.
No question. Brooks Cabana, kind enough to join us as we kind of preview a little bit of this LSU football season that's getting started with training camp on Thursday. I'm really curious about the running back spot. I know Clyde Edwards-Helaire has the most experience. You got Leonard Fournette, who basically got the first play from the line of scrimmage a year ago against Miami. And then you've got Chris Curry, who looks to be the bruiser, and then two very imposing freshmen with all the stars pointing toward John Emery Jr. How do you foresee Joe Brady, Steve Ensminger, and the running game in this new offense? And is it going to be effective again?
Well, Joe Brady mentioned that, you know, you're going to see a lot of you know, what the Saints did with Alvin Kamara with the running backs. And I think that also goes well to what Clyde Edwards-Helaire does as an all-purpose back. I mean, he's a kickoff returner and had some good catches last season and showed that in the spring as well. So, you know, they're going to be used a lot differently in this kind of scheme. You know, I think John Emery is one of those that is also pretty good in his all-purpose talents. So it sounds like this is going to be a different kind of running back, or at least one type that they can use in certain plays. And I don't think they'll go away from being able to run the ball powerfully. That's why you have Chris Curry there. And I don't think you need to have an Alvin Kamara in on every play. You know, the Saints also had a Mark Ingram who, you know, could catch well, but was a very good runner between the tackles. So, I mean, I think the offense certainly benefits these running backs, and I think it's going to be just as important as it ever was at LSU.
Brooks Cabana of The Advocate. Wide receiver-wise, we know that Justin Jefferson comes back. He was the big target a year ago, but is this the year that Ja'Marr Chase and Terrace Marshall kind of live up to their high school hype? Because it seems like the light went on for both of them late, and I'm hoping big things develop for both of them.
Well, I think the coaching staff hopes that as well. And, you know, I think they made some strides in the spring. You know, you saw it from Ja'Marr Chase in the spring game. He performed very well. Terrace Marshall, the coaches have said, has come along pretty well as well. And I think this new scheme, as they come into it in the spring, I mean, into this preseason, is going to benefit them as well, because beforehand, the positions, you know, wide receivers were learning how to play specific positions. Like, if you were on the outside, you're the X receiver, the Z receiver. Like, you learned on the outside, and he didn't go much elsewhere. You know, under Joe Brady's scheme, they're all going to do just specific routes. They all learn routes, and they can be put in the slot, they can put in the outside, they can do that. So focusing on their talents and their schemes, I think Marshall and Chase can be used more appropriately to what their skills are instead of limiting them to position. And, you know, Brady is, he's passing game coordinator, but he's also a big proponent of the wide receiver coaching. He'll be there with Mickey Joseph every day in practice working with wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And he learned about spacing. He learned about routes. And it seems he's very knowledgeable about it as well and can connect to these players just as Sullivan did before.
Got a lot of wide receivers. Who's the tight end? I mean, I know that Steve Ensminger loves him some tight ends because he was the tight end coach before he became the offensive coordinator. You've got all kind of varieties. You've got players who were injured. You've got a former wide receiver in Stephon Sullivan who's converted to tight end. Where do you see the tight end position?
Well, Ensminger likes tight ends because he can be versatile in different packages, especially throwing two in at a time. And I think there's a lot of diversity in what these tight end skills are. If you got a guy like, let's just say, Thaddeus Moss, who has some blocking tendencies, but he's good as a receiver. You know, you mentioned Stephon Sullivan. He's not much of a blocker, but he's a great receiver in those skill sets. And, like, I think you'll see if they're going to run a tight end and want to get some athleticism and size and over the middle and passing, you'd see more of the Stephon Sullivan split out. But you've got a JUCO guy and T.K. McClendon that came in at LSU who's probably more suited to be a blocker. So if you were going to bring two tight ends, you might bring in Sullivan, McClendon on the inside. So, you know, I think he has a lot of variety in what he can do. And Jamal Pettigrew, he was out last year with an ACL tear. He's back and kind of can do both. So you haven't seen much from what Pettigrew and Moss and McClendon can do. We've seen Sullivan as a receiver. He brought down the Hail Mary catch against Louisiana Tech last year. He was an effective receiver, but, you know, that'll be a good thing to see from what they do in the preseason because I think a lot of skills are different between them, and I think he'll have a lot of options this year in what he can do.
Yeah, they've got all a variety of different styles of players, and it seems like at each position on the offensive side, if they can just keep it organized and manageable, there's a plethora of things that can be done there.
Sure, and somebody needs to step up also in the exemplary as well. I mean, you don't know exactly if you've got a plus player there. You know, we haven't seen much, if it's actually going to be effective.
No question. Defensive line, when's it going to be at full strength with Rashard Lawrence, Braden Fajoco, Tyler Shelvin? They've all had health issues in the past year. Get them healthy, and it seems like they really like this Apu Ika newcomer.
Yeah, I mean, if you've checked on social media, a lot of these defensive linemen and outside linebackers go out to Houston to train. And in those videos, you can see Rashard Lawrence. He's recovered well from his knee surgery that he missed the spring for. Also, Kalavon Chaisson is full there. I think defensive line, they've got depth there. And if Rashard Lawrence hadn't come back, because he had a chance to go pro, but I think maybe some of the injury had something to do with that, but you can't know for certain. But if he hadn't come back, depth would have been an issue because a lot of the players last year didn't have a lot of experience there. And, you know, with Rashard Lawrence coming back, you've got Glenn Logan on the other end. And, nose tackle I think will be an improvement this year because not only is Tyler Shelvin getting pushed, but Apu Ika, I mean, he looked like a starter as a true freshman coming in. He dominated in the spring and you kind of wonder whether that means he's good or if the offensive line is bad, but they've got depth there. And Lawrence is pretty respected. He got named to the first team all SEC preseason during SEC media day. So, you know, he had his big game against Central Florida where he's the defensive MVP. So, you know, it seems like defensive line is going to be a pretty good spot than it was last year.
Bruce Cabina of The Advocate, call me crazy. Nobody can replace a Devin White, but, I mean, with Michael Divinity Jr., Kalavon Chaisson, Patrick Queen, and Jacob Phillips all on the preseason list for candidates for the Butkus Award, by committee, this might be one of the better linebacker corps on paper. I know it's not on the field yet, but on paper, this might be an awesome group.
I don't know if it'll match what it was last year, because Devin White was an all generation type player. You know, what he could do as a blitzer, as a cover, his speed, just him himself set an LSU linebacker depth farther beyond what anybody could really give. And if Kalavon Chaisson had been there last year, who knows what that might have been. But yeah, I think the jury is still out on Divinity. We haven't seen him play against major competition at middle linebacker. And I think Queen and Phillips, we've seen what Phillips was able to do, and we haven't really seen Queen yet. I was surprised to see his name actually come up on Butkus because he hasn't had that much experience on the field. But Jason for sure is going to pick up where that gap last year where, you know, they used to have somebody like Arden Key who could pass rush, and they just searched and searched for that last year, and that'll be a big pickup. But as a group as a whole, will it equal the loss of Devin White? I'm not sure, but it definitely has, you know, capability to at least give them a pass rush they didn't have last year.
The secondary seems to be the strength of the club. Last year they said it was the wide receiver group that was the strength. This year you had to replace a Greedy Williams, but, boy, they seem loaded there.
They do, but the depth is also interesting. So, you know, you've got a true freshman, Derek Stingley, starting, and, you know, he has all the signs of being a stud at that position. But behind him, with Kelvin Joseph leaving in the transfer portal for good, he actually visited Florida over the weekend, if you catched up with his social media. They, you know, you've got Kerry Vincent at nickel. Would you put him over at corner? Because everyone else after him is a true freshman coming in. I mean, they've got three, four guys, including like Cordell Flott and Hampton. You know, that's pretty much all they've got there. So Christian Fulton and Derek Stingley, you know, Fulton's a guy who missed the last three games of the year with the foot surgery. So he's had a record of being hurt. So, you know, they need to be – they're good and, you know, have a chance to be all SEC players, if not all Americans. But, you know, if their health is probably, outside of Joe Burrow, the most important thing on LSU's team right now.
Very, very good point. No question. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. May not be fair. Cade York, I can't imagine him being another Cole Tracy. 29 of 33 made field goals. But if he's consistent, that's another big question mark there.
So the thing about Cade York, you know, Cole Tracy has earned a lot of respect, and rightfully so, almost won a Luke Rose Award as a kicker and beat Auburn and was very successful throughout the year. The one thing, and Cole Tracy hasn't yet been picked up by an NFL team, which take that for what you will, but, you know, there has been questions about his power. There is no question about Cade York and his power. You know, he hit a 59-yarder in the high school American game. That's been well-publicized. So he can give them a deep threat that, you know, they haven't had in recent memory at LSU. And Greg McMahon is very confident in his York's confidence as a true freshman coming into the big SEC world. So depending on how he adjusts, you know, that's a guy who can be a plus at the position, even from what they had last year as far as kicking in distance. So the funny thing is Ed Ogeron said they got used to having a kicker that could make it, was automatic from 40 yards, and sometimes that influenced what they would do on third down, and he didn't like that. But Cade York might even just give him that even better. So how much does that change in the management of a football game? So, I mean, they wanted to be more aggressive at times, but, you know, maybe you aren't because of the leg there. But certainly it'd be interesting to see what York's distance is.
A lot of talent, still some questions to be answered. And as always, injuries, boy, if you can stay away from them, then LSU has a chance to have a very special team this year if all things fall into play. Bruce Cabina will be covering for you daily with The Advocate. We greatly appreciate your time. And now go back to your rest and relaxation, man. And Thursday will be here before you know it. So thank you, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it. There's never really much relaxation. There's always something going on.
Always. Thank you, my friend. I greatly appreciate it. That is Brooks Cabina of The Advocate as we get ready for training camp. We'll get ready to wrap things up after this on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
The Blonde Bomber is back. and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, finishing touches on a football-heavy Monday. Training camp in session for the Saints. The big story of the day, Cam Meredith released by the Saints. The best ability is availability, and he was never available. Always, always in the training room. Always. All right, history lesson time. It was on this day, July 29th, just 1 year ago, the year 2018. What a who's list. Chipper Jones, Alan Trammell, Trevor Hoffman, Vladimir Guerrero, Jim Tomey, and Jack Morris, all inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. On this day, July 29th, the year 2018. If today is your birthday, happy July 29th to you and yours. You share your day with 26-year-old Dak Prescott. Is he going to get the big payday from Jerry? Well, we'll see. And one of the all-time greats right there from Crowley, Louisiana. Boy, what a defensive back. Played a little running back at LSU. Was a safety in the NFL. Now a doctor, the legendary Dr. Tommy Casanova, celebrating a birthday today. Tommy, still one of the greatest of all time when it comes to LSU football. Man, what a punt returner too, huh? Remember him? Unbelievable. All right, special thanks to our guest today, Sean Fazan from Fox 8 New Orleans with the New Orleans Saints update. Watch out for those young wide receivers. Jimmy Detail, Jimmy Smith with all the latest on LSU football recruiting. Jaqueline Roy, boy, what a must-get that Coach O got. Yes, indeed. And Brooks Cabina, as LSU reports to training camp, Brooks of the Advocate kind of went position chart by position chart. LSU's loaded, but some players got to step up and become big-time SEC players, and you got to stay away from the injury bugaboo. Offensive line is going to be critical in fall camp. Yes, indeed. Dave Griffin says that Zion's still growing. Now he's taller than his sidekick who went to the New York Knicks, and he's still growing. Come on, Zion. Let's tip the scales about 6'9". But that would be something. Anyway, CD, job well done. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day, like DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game, God willing. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Happy National Chicken Wing Day. Boom, go get you some wings at Hooters. We'll see you tomorrow. So long, everybody. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.